Welcome to the Eucharist Podcast. My name is Father Ryan. I'm the rector at Eucharist Church. And today we have a special episode of our podcast series that corresponds with our churchwide focus, which also connects to a catechesis series that we're doing called Good Earth. And we're talking about how all of creation becomes transparent to the glory of God and catching a sense of wonder at God's creation and all sorts of other good stuff like that. So I'm here today with Katie Demjanjuk. And she is a person who has joined our church actually during the pandemic. And so, Katie, I want you to tell us a little bit about your story. And you can mention how you came to Eucharist Church, but also, more importantly, I'd love to hear about how this series lines up with some of your interests. So tell us a little bit about where you're from and all that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. So I am from Southern Wisconsin. I grew up in a really small town. My dad is a veterinarian, and then both of my uncles who live in Wisconsin are also veterinarians. So there was a lot of family events. There was a lot of, you know, joking about who was on call and who had to go, you know, do a C-section and deliver a calf, things like that. And then my dad's father is actually from Northern Wisconsin, grew up on a dairy farm. So I think growing up, I always kind of had this, the ag industry and the dairy industry was always very much a part of my life. And I had a lot of friends that grew up on farms. And so, this kind of, you know, cycle of how food works and everything was always a really big part of my life. And, I was in thinking about this episode, I was, reflecting back on when I got into gardening, and I think I was 8 years old and
wow. Started very young. That's great.
Very young. My Aunt Eleanor gave her gifts were always books. And so we were visiting my mom's family in North Carolina, and she brought a couple books for my birthday. And one of the books was this book called Lily's Garden. And it's about this little girl who got interested in gardening, and she goes through the whole year in this book. The illustrations are great, and she details all of the struggles of her garden and all of these things. And I just remember being totally engrossed in this book. Huh. And so then I wrote down a list, and I just said, I want to have a garden. This sounds so cool. So then started my, you know, kind of love of gardening, and it was a lot of trial and error in the beginning, and my dad kind of helped me figure it out. And I had a garden through high school, and then when I would come home from college in the summers. And
what did you grow in your gardens? Like what kind of things were you growing?
I love like tomatoes and zucchini, all of the very common things. So like tomatoes, zucchini, you know, beans, peas. I think I tried, you know, some like watermelons or melons or things that are a little more technical to grow. There was a really big learning curve. So it was, you know, very rudimentary in the beginning. And then over time I built raised beds and then kind of refined what was going on. And then in high school, I started working for a farmer. My freshman year of high school, my science teacher, his wife runs a farm. And she runs a CSA farm. And
some of us may not know what a CSA is. So maybe.
So CSA is community supported agriculture. So you pay in a certain amount of money at the beginning of the season, and then you get weekly allotments of vegetables throughout the summer.
It goes up at your door and they're like, this week we have these vegetables or whatever.
Yes. And so, and then with that, the farmer is also named Katie. And she would, you know, put together recipes and ideas. And so anyway, I kind of, this working on the farm really deepened my love for food and gardening and just the beauty to the world that we live in. And then it was probably, I was trying to remember, I think it's probably my junior year of high school. I remember it was around Christmas time, and I was kind of having a bit of the Charlie Browns. I couldn't get in the Christmas spirit. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to my sister, and I think she had recently started going to an Anglican church. Mm-hmm. And I just said, Lauren, I don't know what it is. I just don't have the Christmas spirit this year. And she said, well, Katie, maybe it's not a feeling. Maybe you're not preparing. And I was like, oh, well, maybe you're right. So I think then she sent me an Advent book. And then I loved that. Uh-huh. And then
your first introduction to the idea of Advent, or
yes, okay. My first introduction. And I think we had done things when I was younger, you know, maybe the days of Christmas, but it wasn't mm-hmm. it wasn't this way to kind of orient my heart towards what's going on. Yeah. It was more of a kind of Christmas is coming, this is exciting, rather than theologically what's going on.
Yeah.
And then I think shortly after that, my sister gave me a book, Inheriting Paradise, which I recommended to you.
I got a great part of it. It's very
good. Yeah. And so I think shortly after, I think it was that following springtime, my sister gave me that book. And I just remember, I feel like light bulbs were turning on left and right, because I thought, this is important. Mm. And
by this, you mean like the liturgical year and yes. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. And just, I felt like, I think I struggled a lot growing up in, I grew up in a very evangelical non-denominational church. And one of the things that I really struggled with in my faith was feeling like it was a performance and mm-hmm. feeling like it was just kind of this emotional thing. Like we can think our way to holiness or think our way to a better relationship with God. Mm. And so I think that was something I really struggled with, this idea that the physical world doesn't really matter. And just kind of what we do with our bodies, you know, you just have a body, you aren't a body. This kind of idea of we're just going to leave this place anyway. So kind of don't worry about it. Yeah. I really struggled with that idea. And so I think it was when I started kind of looking at the way that, you know, the liturgical year, you know, also mirrors the calendar year and the agricultural year. It felt like there was so much more gravity to what we were doing. And it felt like there were meat on the theological bones. Uh-huh. And so I remember just kind of these light bulbs are turning on and there's just so much hope in it, which is something that I love. And I think I found a great amount of, I think it was around that time that I really felt like my faith started to become my own. This thing that I can really lean into, and this thing that it's not just about me, but I get to co-create with Christ when I'm gardening and I'm working and when I'm engaging in this beautiful thing that he has given us. Yeah. And I think, I think that was a really big turning point for me in my own walk.
I love how you're talking about how this love for gardening and this like discovery of the liturgical calendar actually play together really well in your life. And so I think that's really fascinating. And produces good fruit.
Totally.
So I want to ask you a little bit more about gardening. When you talk about gardening, what actually goes into gardening? What are you doing when you're gardening?
Yeah. Well, it depends on, you know, where you are and what you can grow, but usually, probably around February in Wisconsin, I would, you know, make a list of what I wanted to grow that season. And, there were, you know, I would read different gardener blogs and try and see, you know, what should I be doing for this plant and what I should be doing for this plant. And then I would start seeds inside really early and like end of February, March. And then, usually, and then there's, you know, your last frost date where that's when you say like, okay, you know, these things we can put in early, these things we need to put in after the frost date, things like that.
With a little sign that says this is the last frost, you just kind of like intuitively feel like I think this is the end of the frost season. Is that right?
Well, there's calendars of zones, and so you have to know kind of which zone you're in, and there's a range there of, you know, usually by, you know, whatever it is, like May 2nd, you know, you'll kind of be done with frost, and so then around that time, then you start having to And there's kind of different steps in my progression with gardening. At least when we started, it was tilling. And then later in my career gardening in Wisconsin, that was when I moved to raised beds. And so I was doing more with composting, and I wasn't doing as much with, you know, tilling the soil, and I was doing more with raised beds later on. So I think there was kind of this, I mean, there's really nothing like those first few spring days where you feel like this is why we're doing this. Like, you know, the grass is getting green and, you know, things are growing inside, and we've put in the work to go, you know, see the fruit and plant these plants that we're excited about. And, I was reading an article also by Vegan Brian, and it's, I believe it's called On Weeds and Fairy Tales. And he talks about how you can't talk about gardening without talking about weeds. And, he talks about how when he's preparing his garden in the time of, oftentimes it's during Lent when he's preparing his garden, and he's weeding out these bad things in preparation to plant these seeds that are going to bear good fruit. And so anyway, there's just so much excitement around, you know, springtime and getting the garden ready. And it's not just the gardening either. I think not just the garden either. I think it was so exciting in the spring seeing, you know, the farmers back out in the fields and this land that has been quiet and covered with snow for so many months. Now it just has so much life. So that was kind of springtime and getting things ready. There's so much excitement in the spring, and those warm spring rains are really, really lovely.
Yeah. So there's a lot more seasonality in Wisconsin, obviously, than there is in the peninsula or in San Francisco here. But still the sense that nature goes through these cycles, and it's actually illuminating and exciting to pay attention to what's actually happening in them.
Absolutely.
And to cooperate with them. Like you said, it feels like you're in a sense co-creating, which goes right back to, you know, Genesis and God telling them to care for and cultivate and make the earth fruitful and multiply, et cetera. Like, this is a very deeply Christian but human thing to do, right?
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah. So is there anything about like so there's like different ways to farm or different ways to like grow? I think I remember in a conversation we had previously that you have an interest in more like regenerative agriculture. Is that right? How did that come about? And maybe can you highlight a few of the differences and why it matter as for Christians to think about this?
Yeah. So I am very much still a novice at all of this, I will admit. I think, so a lot of this actually, a lot of my attention to this, a lot of this was brought to my attention when I started working at Madison, working for the researcher doing pollinator research.
Back in a moment, because that's really interesting. You have to tell us about that, but go ahead.
Yeah. And so I think a lot of that came to my attention when I started seeing, you know, pollinators and how bees are really an indicator species of the health of the environment. So anyway, I think, and this will probably tie in more with bees, but, a lot of, like we can see that, monocropping is really, really hard on pollinators. You know, you just have miles and miles and miles of corn, and it's really hard for them to have floral resources and pollen resources. And so I think when I was, you know, studying bees, I think I kind of started thinking like, is there a better way that we can be doing this? And, is there a better way that we can provide for, you know, the things that are providing for us? Like, can we, you know, coexist in a way that's helpful for everybody? Regenerative agriculture is much more on the side of, it's much smaller scale. There's more family farms involved. And it's kind of this idea of, you're not really monocropping a ton. You are, kind of moving the animals across the land in a certain pattern. So animals are never, you know, you're not going to have beef cows on a certain patch of land for months and months. You know, you're going to have, you know, beef cows here, you're going to have you know, at some point it's just going to be chickens. You're going to have different animals kind of moving across the land because they need different things and they kind of use the land differently. And so it's kind of this idea of kind of respecting what we have. And then also it's kind of this give and take relationship, I think, more so than just we can use this resource
right
until we can't use it anymore.
Right. There's like not like exploitative extraction mindset where we're just going to like make the land produce what we want. And then when it's worn out, we'll discard it kind of thing.
Totally. Yeah.
Or is it kind of a cooperation with the cycles of nature? So, I mean, like,
yes.
Some people may know the name Joel Salatin or the this polyphase farm, and he popularized through the Food Inc. I think documentary and some other stuff. But this idea of moving using animals in correspondence with the plants and the pollinators and all of it working together in sort of one big ecosystem, as it seems to have been designed to be done.
Yes,
that's much more. Yeah. So that stuff got exciting to you, and but it came to the pollinators. So tell us about the pollinators. I want to hear about your research.
Yeah. So the researcher that I worked with at Madison, she was studying the relationship between pollinator diversity and pollinator health and correlating that with floral availability and floral diversity. Mm-hmm. So most of the day-to-day of that work was going to hive yards or farms and looking at, you know, what types of bees are here, you know, or do we have mostly solitary bees that are, you know, that live, you know, in little nests in the ground or live in bark and trees, or do we have mostly honeybees? Because actually wild bees are better pollinators than honeybees. It's been easier to kind of monitor the honeybees. So they've kind of become the mascot of the Save the Bees movement. So that was kind of the day to day. And so I think in that we also built some really great relationships with different farmers and beekeepers around Southern Wisconsin. And it was really amazing to see how much life was in those farms and how much life is in this, you know, system where, you know, they're not spraying all of these chemicals that kill bees. And so, you know, you see tons and tons of bees on these plants, and that was just, it was really amazing. And I think from that experience, I think that was really formative in my just love of and the way that, you know, the natural world has really enriched my own faith, and just seeing the way that there's truly goodness and there's truly beauty in the world. Mm-hmm. And there's this order. And I think from that, I mean, it's just incredible to see, even just like watching one little honeybee come back to the hive and, you know, or watching a little honeybee come up to a flower, and the way that she has this whole system and she knows what she's doing, and you know, the way that she, you know, stores all the pollen on her back legs, and she has this whole system of what she's doing. And I think there was just so much wonder and so much clear order to what was going on, and the way that they were real, like she was really fulfilling this role that is important and that, you know, is a very small thing, but I think made me realize how much there are so many of these really seemingly small things that God spoke very clearly into this ecosystem that we see, and it's so beautiful.
Yeah, your experience resonates with so much of mine too, where, I mean, the last couple of years, I've spent a lot of time thinking and reading, listening to podcasts and exploring this area of regenerative agriculture. And the more I explore, the more I'm like just in utter awe of how God created the world, and in particular how the soil works and how these entire ecosystems of, like, you know, the pollinators and the plants and the trees and the mycorrhizal fungi and the bacteria and everything is working together to produce food. I mean, like take any of those things away and it wouldn't work, you know. I mean, it's wild. And so anyway, there's a lot of wonder there for me as well.
Yeah. Have you felt like that's really influenced your own faith or enriched it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's given me a much deeper appreciation for God's good creation, and made me want to be a lot less cavalier about how I receive the gifts of creation, whether it's my food or just understanding, like when I'm walking in a forest, it's so much more complicated than that. A seed fell into the dirt and like started growing. Like there's a whole lot going on there. Mm-hmm. So it makes me feel small sometimes. And I like that, actually. I don't mind feeling small because I'm one of God's creatures, but right. God is so big and all of that. And it's great. Mm-hmm. Now for you're so excited about this. You were telling me that you're thinking about doing more study in this area, like officially, is that right?
Yeah, I am. And I think I'm still trying to kind of discern and sort out what exactly that would look like. But I've definitely been looking into programs of nutrition, some that are more food systems, mm-hmm. some that maybe err even more on the side of sustainability. Mm-hmm. But I've, for a long time, I think I was hesitant to kind of go into that. I think in college, a lot of my friends were planning on going to med school or things like that. And so I think it took a second for me to step back and realize what a really big role creation and agriculture has played in my life, and in my spiritual formation as well.
And there's also maybe kind of like I mean, this is maybe only in my experience, but there's sort of a poor stereotype for people who are in agriculture. Like this is like a less educated community, or that there's not no sophistication to it. Anybody can farm kind of thing. But the more I've discovered, I'm like, no, this is like, there's like incredible amounts of scientific detail that's bound into every single part of this. And there's so much more to learn. Like I listen to podcasts with people who are like experts in these areas. And I'm just, again, I'm like, whoa, I never realized this about, you know, X, Y, or Z. Mm-hmm. And so it's just given me a greater appreciation and respect for those who work in agriculture, those who work in food production, and those who are farmers. And so anyway, I just think it's a wonderful career for Christians to be involved. I mean, it's like a deeply Christian avenue, you know, and I feel like it's less explored in many cases. So I'm thrilled that you're considering this as a possibility. Yeah. Maybe as we wrap up here, what do you wish that Christians would realize about God's creation? Like talk to your brothers and sisters for a moment here. What do you want to encourage them to like pay attention to perhaps?
Yeah. I think just first thing that comes to my head is go be in creation is the first thing that comes to my head. And just sit and look at it. And I think there's just so much beauty in the world, and the fact that we have senses, and the fact that we can taste and see that the Lord is good in very tangible ways. And we see that on Sunday when, you know, we're taking communion and he's feeding us, you know, he's giving us this day our daily bread. And I think go out and experience the goodness and the beauty that is before us, and lean into this rhythm that God has, I think, created us for, and the ways that there are times of quiet, and there are times of, and there's kind of this winter, but spring comes and Easter comes. So I think go out and experience it and just wonder at the creation that he's given us.
Yeah, that's so good. I love it. Yeah. Katie, thank you so much for your time today. It's so fun to hear your story and hear about your passion that's obvious here for God's good creation, for gardening, and for getting out into the unbuilt environment and wondering at the God's good creation. And so thank you for your time. Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Eucharist Podcast. For more information, visit our website, at eucharistsf.org.